This broadcast is brought to you by Pearson, the team that brings you The Self, the Goldman Fristo, and now the new Peabody Picture Vocabulary Test 5 and the Expressive Vocabulary Test 3. Enjoy a special 10% pre-publication discount when you order these vocabulary tests before December 31st, 2018. Learn more at pearsonclinical.com/PPVT5.
Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each other.
Bridging what I have in my head to the outside world.
Draws us out of ourselves, draws us into that relationship, you know, builds up our families. Without it, we'd be lost.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Hello and welcome to Speech Science episode 57. I'm Matt Hott, joined as always by Michelle Wintering.
How's it going, Matt?
I'm good, thank you. And Michael McLeod.
What's up, buddy?
Oh, living the dream here, guys. I want to start on a bummer note this week.
Ooh, all right. So I guess we can go uphill from there.
Minutes ago, I was just learning how to scrape crayon wax out of my dryer.
Oh. I feel like, you know, you've talked about man points before, Matt.
Yeah.
These are dad points.
Yeah, there you go. I may have slipped multiple 5- and 4-letter words that are not suitable for any child as doing it. And yeah, multiple crayons melted together inside the dryer drum. But in case anyone's wondering, WD-40 on a wash rag gets rid of the wax.
Ooh, all right.
You're supposed to heat it up or like clean it out and then heat it up and then clean it out again. So.
All right, I'm going to keep this idea in the back pocket so that when this happens to me in a few years, I will call you for the reminder.
As long as you don't keep the crayons in the back pocket, you're okay.
We're good. Okay, sounds good.
Isn't that flammable, though, the WD-40?
Right, that's why I was supposed to clean it off after. We learned that part also, that
wow.
When we turned the dryer back on, it started to smell like something was going to catch fire. Then my wife said, did you clean this off, the WD-40? I went, no, I thought the wet towel inside would have done that.
Oh, boy.
So,
all right, so.
Yay.
It was getting real hot in there.
Hot in the hot house.
Guess what? Last week was a weird reprieve. I didn't have more than 5 IEPs and ETRs combined. This week, there are 12.
I'm just going to slow clap for you, Matt.
That is how my week is going. Michael, let's start off with you in Philly. How is life out there in the city of brotherly love?
Yeah, it's good. Just acclimating back from my trip last week. Still doing a lot of makeup sessions. Really getting more and more involved in the schools that I go to. Really just getting back in the swing of things. Really making sure I get all my sessions in before the holiday break.
I didn't unmute myself there. Now, with you having private practice, do you see patients between Christmas and New Year's, or is it kind of everyone goes on break, or how does that work?
Typically, if it's requested, if a parent really asks for a session, I'm basically just on call, really. So if a parent asks for a session or requests it ahead of time, then I'll definitely make myself available.
Very cool. And Michelle Wintering, how's life in the gateway to the south, just south of Louisville? How's it going for you?
I'm going well here. We got some snow last week, and we took my son out to experience the cold. We've got a visitor here for a couple days this week. My dad's in town.
Oh,
nice.
And then what else we got?
How's the chief doing?
He's doing great. Thanks.
Yeah, good to know. I love
retirement's it. Treating him well.
I bet. No one ever says retirement is terrible.
I hope not. Otherwise, what are we working for?
A good point.
A new dryer.
Yeah, doing some continuing education credits, working on lining up some interviews for us for the podcast.
Awesome.
I'm really excited about those. And yeah, staying busy.
Now, how many more weeks until you go back to therapy?
Oh, going back to work?
Yeah.
I got to work on my, I'm trying to navigate getting my Kentucky licensure right now. That moving state to state thing makes things a little bit of a challenge.
Keep your ass to C's.
Oh, always. Yep.
I also did a ton of CEUs these past couple of weeks. It's just one of those things where you just got to cram it in, make sure you get those hours, be real documented. And one of the best things about social media is just the different Facebook groups with all the SLPs, whether it be speech pathologists at large or school SLPs, like all the SLPs out there. And I'm sure the majority of our listeners, we do such a good job networking and sharing information and collaborating. They're like just a couple of random people. I wish I knew their names had posted these like Black Friday CEU sales. I got a really good one through like northernspeechservices.com. It was like six CEU hours.
Wow.
I got a great discount on MedBridge. So I did a ton on there. So it helped me out big time. I was able to get a lot done in a short amount of time.
I know my school district pays for speechpathology.com. So that's where I end up doing mine during the year. I made sure before November started that I had everything kind of locked and keyed away, so that way I didn't have to make the CEU run this year. But I'm not up for renewal for ASHA, just have to pay the due part. But Ohio, I have to make sure all my CEUs are in, and we have to do ethics now in Ohio too. So
yeah,
most states are requiring that now, I think.
And I have to do like if you supervise, you have to do a supervision one as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we want to hear from you. How's your CEUs going? Also, did you rate and review us? We got one new one this week, so we need to make sure you're doing that for us. Head to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, or give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. We're also on Twitter. You can hashtag us or find us on Facebook under our Speech Science Facebook page. But yes, we want to get you to rate and review us. We want to try to get to, 200 by the end of 2019, starting the New Year's resolution off pretty quickly. All right, coming up on today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about what do you do with special services after high school. Also, can brain stimulation help aphasia? And what do patients with dementia and how do they read body language? That's coming up. You're listening to Speech Science.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. You don't know why. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're gonna go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna go grocery shopping, cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You gotta dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. I know you won't, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Now go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Do you have an idea for a product or book? Or are you ready to go beyond in-service presentations? Well, how do you get started? And what if you don't have any business experience at all? Well, I have some great news for you. I'm Mei-Ling Chan, and I'm getting the nitty-gritty stories from parents, teachers, therapists, advocates, and people with disabilities who have created successful businesses, and they're sharing their intimate stories with you. Listen to us on the Exceptional Leaders Podcast and fast-track creating and building and sharing your idea with the world so that you can help more people.
Welcome back to Speed Science. I'm Matt Hodge, and as always, Michelle Wintering.
Hi, Matt.
Michael McLeod.
Hi, Matt.
Hi. You know, I don't have any reason or rhyme or reason of how I introduce you guys. I just look at whoever my eyes drift to first, and it's usually whoever's not moving. I go, oh, is their camera frozen?
You keep us on our toes, so we don't know who you're going to talk to first.
That's the good radio host. I just make sure everyone doesn't know what's going on, and it makes it sound wonderful.
We definitely have no idea what's going on.
None of us.
No doubt about it.
Oh, well, this first article, what we do know, comes down to the Montana Standard. It talks a little bit about what happens after high school and how students transitioning out of high school into the real world are having difficulty finding job placement. They've got the Independent Living Project in Butte, Montana, is trying to find special needs students graduate immediately into local disability support programs, but most people are waitlisted for these services. I know from personal experience, it feels like, I don't want to say a mad rush, but it almost feels like a race when students turn 19 before they leave the school district at 22 to get them into either a job placement or get them into a sheltered workshop or something that they can start self-sustaining. Do you guys have any of that same experience?
Definitely, yes. With before I went to grad school, I worked for Goodwill Industries with a transition program. Our target population was 18 to 25, but we worked with older than that as well, but especially those kids coming out of IEPs and special education who needed some sort of extra support before entering the workforce or continuing their own education. But those programs can be hard to find. And a lot of them are grant funded, so they often last for a brief period, whatever that grant is, and if they get renewed or not can be up in the air.
Says the 0208 waiver allows Montana to support about 2,800 individuals with a roughly $110 million for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
That seems like a lot of money until you realize it's only 2,800 people being serviced by that.
Mm-hmm. And you're dividing that for their lifespan as well.
So there are almost 2,000 people on the waiver list or wait list. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. And is it state by state? I've worked in a couple different states now with special education, but I'm trying to remember most states, or is it a national thing where in IEP meetings you're talking about a plan 10 years down the road? Because I know in certain states that there's part of an IEP plan with a triennial, or those mm-hmm, every 3 years, is talking about a plan for when they age out. But I don't know if that is commonplace, because it should be.
Mike, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I didn't know. Like, we lost your video for a second. Do you have any experience with that?
Yeah. When I was in grad school, I actually, from a lot of the families I had worked with and met with, I started to do a lot of life coaching for kids that were in these exact situations. It was really more of just like a peer mentorship kind of situation. But working with these families, and this was in Manhattan, so it was rather wealthy families that were just looking for kind of like a mentorship, big brother for their son. And they were just describing to me they use the word avalanche, the oncoming avalanche of young adults with special needs that just age out of systems and are just completely swept under the rug. And how this is just one of those things that is just getting worse and worse and worse with no true solution in sight. And this is, you know, the way the system is set up with IEPs and early intervention and services in schools, Medicare, There's definitely benefits to the situation, but there's also, you know, in terms of transitions, and once they age out of the system, they're really left with little to no services. I work with one student who just graduated high school, and I know how incredibly hard his mom worked to find a program for him. And she was lucky enough to find this thing called the College Living Experience. Hmm. And that was it has multiple sites, and they partner with local universities. And he goes there, and it's an amazing program. I still talk to him all the time, multiple times a week on the phone. And he's down there. He's having a great time, and he's making friends, going on trips, learning life skills, taking college courses. But it's not something that's easily accessible for everyone and every family. So it's a really difficult thing, and there needs to be more programs. I know John Stewart does a huge event every year, trying to raise money for individuals with autism that age out of school. So it's something that definitely needs more attention, and as the issue continues to grow, hopefully more funding comes its way.
That is the College Living Experience. I've just pulled up their website, experiencecle.com. I will throw a link in our show. Since 1989, they've been providing transition for ASD, ADHD, and other varying exceptionality. There we go. I couldn't say it. Michelle, here in Ohio, it's not, I don't know if it's necessarily 10 years. I know when the student hits 14, there has to be a high school plan put into place. And then when they're 16, it's mandatory for career training, post-secondary training, and there's another one. It basically, independent living. So those are the three areas that we have to address. But maybe it's because I work in high school. It's not 10 years. It's usually
maybe five years.
So maybe it's 10 when they're younger.
10 may have just been a number I said.
Yeah. No, it's okay.
But I just remember talking to some of my kids' parents saying, whoa, we have to start thinking about, you know, from this IEP meeting, thinking about them after high school, which seems overwhelming, but at the same time, you have to start doing. But what Mike said that we have to remember as well is, you know, his student had the parent to advocate for him, and not everybody has that, right?
Exactly.
Sometimes the therapist has to be that. The teacher has to be that. They have to get other people on board to help get that plan into place, because not everybody has a family or that has the time or the knowledge or the resources to do that sort of legwork to make sure they find something for them.
I just pulled up an article from 2 years ago. I remember hearing it on PBS, and it talked about what happens to developmentally disabled people as their parents age out and die. And it said, 860,000 people nationwide are on waiting lists after their parents have passed away because there's no plan for some of these people.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about how difficult this transition is for typically developing peers. It's really tough, you know, for the kids that have to do have to work for a year and raise money to go to college, or the kids that need to go to community college first before they can go to a true university. And to have an IEP with incredible services and accommodations, where you have a full team working for you and advocating for you, to go from that to basically nothing, it's definitely a hole in the system.
I know in the school district, there's a rush for some of my students that don't have communication devices, talking with parents, and they say, you know, hey, you might be the last SLP that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's like, oh, what do I do? I need to make sure that I get them a device that they can use now, but we'll be able to use in 10 years.
That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I hate those stories where kids are given loaner devices or some device from an organization and it needs to be returned. I've even worked with some kids where the devices can't go home with them. It has to stay at the school or with the therapist. It's ridiculous. It's like taking the words out of the kid's mouth.
Unfortunately, I'm the SLP in that situation. and we rent our devices or, you know, borrow iPads with communication apps from the ESC. And for the most part, the iPads stay at school when the students leave. But I know for a fact that, like, I work to try to get communication devices for the students, and then that way they can take them home. But you're right. There's nothing worse than saying, okay, well, they've worked really hard on this device, and I will see them in August.
That's terrible.
Here's some picture cards. I mean,
or if they age out, like you said, I will. Okay, glad you could use this device. Bye.
So what's the solution to that? Is that something that Apple can help? Can Apple make that sacrifice and say, okay, this is used for more than just, you know, gaming and for videos? Does Apple have to loan devices?
This is my 100% opinion. And this is me, Matt Hott, not speech science, not Michelle Wintering, not Michael McCloud. We are failing as speech and language pathologists across the board. I really, truly believe that. I believe that we are doing such a poor job of getting communication devices into students' hands. This is my opinion. I really do believe that from a school district point of view, that it's either because caseload numbers are too high, we're too tired, there's too much paperwork, but we are failing as communication experts to find the device that truly matches up with that student. And I think it's too much of kicking the can down the road. I've talked to too many SLPs where they say, oh, AAC is not my thing. I've been doing this for 25 years. I've been doing this for 5 years. I don't like technology, whatever. Personally, I think it's our fault as communication experts. I just wrote up a report for a device. I've written up two. One has been in hold for Medicaid, and it's going through its wonderful process. The other one is private insurance. And the one from private insurance, from the day I wrote the paperwork to the day the parent got the confirmation, 1 month. Now, there's been other cases that have taken 6 months or 8 months, and I get that. But when we look at school-based SLPs, we're the ones that are on the front line. We need to do a better job. No offense to the guys in private practice like yourself, Michael, or Michelle, but when we see students in kindergarten, when we see students in preschool or first grade that are nonverbal, and we don't help the parents get into a communication device, and then we kick that can to the third grade SLP, and then that one kicks it into the fifth grade, and now they're in the high school and they're nonverbal, we have failed them. And that's just my opinion. It's not an Apple thing. It's not a tablet thing. I think it's an us thing. And I don't know how to fix that other than saying we need to do a better job. But realistically, us in schools, we see these kids first before they maybe go to you, Michael, maybe before they go to you, Michelle. And the reasons, and I'm not taking anything away from private practice people. I sometimes feel the reason why a parent sends someone to private practice is because we're failing in the school district. If I'm doing my job as an SLP, theoretically, they don't need to go to a private practice unless they want to see and I'm not underselling what you're doing. Please don't take that way, Michael. But like, if I'm doing my job, for the most part, they should be getting what they need in the school, but they're not. And is that because of caseload? Is it because of whatever? I don't know. But that's my personal opinion. And feel free to attack me. speechscience2018@gmail.com.
Matt's hot take. I like it.
No, and I'm not trying to undersell private practice, because I think there is a purpose for that, because in the schools we need to make sure that we're looking at just adverse effect on the education system. But communication, man, there's no reason to have kids move 12 years through school and then all of a sudden they're graduating and aging out, and guess what, they don't have a communication. This just blows my mind. And it's not just my district, it's every district.
Well, just from my experience, I'm very lucky to be where I am, right outside of Philadelphia. And I work with some incredible school SLPs that are eager to collaborate and eager to share ideas. So that's just been my personal experience. If you're out there, if you're a school SLP or if you're a private practice SLP, we would love to hear from you and love to hear your opinion. Please reach out. In terms of the iPad thing that you were talking about, but who is it who creates the regulations of this iPad needs to stay at the school and can't go home with the student? Who's the one doing that?
The district.
So us as SLPs, what can we do about that?
Get them in the ones that they can take home. I mean, realistically, I mean, that's the thing is like, if we're doing trial devices, at most times SLPs get what, 4 iPads?
Yeah.
And if you've got 10 nonverbal students, you're already sharing an iPad. It, you know, doing the funding for the paperwork. I mean, that's the thing where we need to do better is, you know, I mean, if you're taking a PRC, if you're going to get a PRC device, it's aacfunding.com. They walk you through it. If you're doing Dynavox, Dynavox has their own part on their website, or Toby Dynavox has a thing on their own website to walk you through on how to do the paperwork. And then guess what? After you do the paperwork, there's somebody on the other side that reads it to make sure that all the boxes are checked and all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And then when it gets declined, there's somebody there that'll help you fight. I had to go to court to fight one. And the person from PRC, she contacted me and was like, okay, here's the questions they're probably going to ask you.
The staff from those companies will come out either do web-based or will come do in-person, if possible, trainings for you and for other staff or for family members. I think this is, you just made a really good point, Matt, that we need to tap into some of those resources that are available and not just rely on the general provided devices in a school setting and fight for those individual devices that belong to that student.
Bingo.
So do we have to start using more Kindle Fires? Is that a more cost-effective approach?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think it goes down to, do we put a Band-Aid on it, which is the loaner device through the school district, or who do we look at to get the device into the kids' hands to keep? Because even if we figure out a way and the school district says, hey, yeah, take the device home every weekend and take it home over weekends and whatever, what happens over the summertime? There has to be some point where somebody gets the device for the student, and that's where they have insurance or Medicaid or Medicare or private pay. Or donorschoose.org. I don't know anything.
Yeah, there has to be something. I know with a lot of my families that aren't just able to, like, I do a lot of AAC, like for kids who I see privately and I recommend AAC for them. My usual course of process is I'll initially recommend the AVAZ program, AVAZ. And one of the main reasons I do that, this was a program that Lucas Stuber helped consult with. It's a program out of India. Fantastic program. I Lucas had me meet with one of the guys in New York City back when I was in grad school to kind of help them out with some of the things from a speech standpoint. Great program, but the main reason I recommend it is because you can download it from the App Store completely for free, and you can do a free 15 to 20 day free trial. It's a free download, free trial, and it gives parents a chance to really have a first step towards AAC. And see, okay, is this something I could really use with my child? And then I use it with the child in therapy, and you see how they catch on to it. And some of the kids stick with the AVAZ. Some of the kids have great success and they stick with it. And sometimes it filters into the more expensive programs like TouchChat and ProLoquo. But I'm always starting with the most cost-effective approach initially. So whether us as SLPs need to develop a more cost-effective approach, or it's more on the laws and regulations side of things, we need to do whatever we can to make sure that these kids have their devices with their AAC programs on guided access whenever they need it.
And that you just reminded me that I know Toby has the professional law. You can register on their website as a professional and download and use certain tablet-based communication programs for free.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of therapists aren't aware of that.
I don't want to say what I just said before, but it comes back to us, man.
Yeah.
And Matt has just killed the podcast with yelling at all the home, you know, all those speech therapists.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. There's always, I'm always thinking about what more can I do? What could I have done different? What more is there out there for me to do for my students? And sometimes it's as easy as sending out a few emails or responding to a few emails that I let get swept under the rug. And sometimes it's advocating for a device and changing goals or changing the way I track data. So it's there's always something more that we could be doing, but I do like how you threw in the reality of things, mm-hmm. in terms of the paperwork and the large caseload numbers, and all you school SLPs out there, you know, the work you're doing is amazing, and it certainly does not go unnoticed by SLPs in other areas of the field, and whether we need to all do it collectively, I know at the ASHA conference, a lot of the main focus there is on continuing education and spreading things like that. But in terms of advocacy and how we could do things differently for the field, maybe that needs to be more of a focus for next year's conference.
Agreed. So we want to hear from you. If we have not scared you away, head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org, and you can email us speechscience2018@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail 614-681-1798. In something, I guess, a little less hectic, and I won't get on my soapbox for, this is coming out of F1000 Prime. I'm not sure it's like a conglomeration site for studies. Electrical brain simulation and different variants of primary progressive aphasia. Basically, they did transcranial direct current stimulation, which is where they do a constant low direct current delivered by electrodes on the head. And then they looked for controls in results. And 2 months later, they kept the increase that they showed in their initial study.
And this, they were doing, cool. It looked like, naming spelling therapy and mm-hmm. written naming and spelling tasks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I love brain stimulation and electrodes and Dr. Frankenstein type stuff to fix our therapy patients. I love this kind of stuff. I love that we get to experience it on the edge of our field right now.
And I think it is. It's on the edge of the field that this is the kind of stuff that needs more research because of the implications it could have for our clients, for our patients, our kids, whoever it is, our parents, if they're elderly, for aphasia also aphasia is acquired. So I guess why not? This is, keep researching it. Way to go.
Also, these sorts of studies are also going to continue to bring more legitimacy to our profession, because along with the electrical brain stimulation, you know, that in and of itself is not going to do it. It needs to be combined with language therapy. So, and it describes that pretty nicely in the article. You need language therapy as the end all be all. So anytime it says, you know, this is not going to work unless there is a speech pathologist involved providing legitimate evidence-based services, then this is not going to work.
Now, they also said it was 15 daily sessions of stimulation coupled with written naming spelling therapy. It's not just like a 9-volt battery. These are legit currents, and they're maintained, and they're done at a certain level. But it is kind of nice to see maybe there is something else out there, and it makes sense of what we tell patients when we talk about how the brain transmits information from one side of the brain to the other, that it's all electrical stimulation. I feel like every time I work with a patient that has aphasia or dementia or anything, and they want to know why their brain doesn't work, I feel like, Michelle, I'm back at Athens and Grover doing a mini neuro discussion at the table with a parent and a patient. And I'm saying, okay, I'm going to try to teach you neuroscience in 5 minutes.
And for anyone who wonders, just so you can relate it to all the SLPs out there who have gone through grad school and been up at 1 a.m. studying neuroscience in whatever your building was called, ours was called Grover, where you spent your life in grad school.
Yeah, but like I'm trying to teach neuroscience and saying, hey, it's an electrical charge. It's not like we don't know how memory and words are formed. We just know kind of where they live. And when you get down to it, it's a weird expression of a chemical and electrical charge that causes our brain to say the word fish. I mean, so it's really cool that we kind of mimic maybe some of the electrical stimulation.
But you said we don't know how it all works. What was that quote from neuroscience that if we understood, I think I've said it before, if we understood everything about our brain, we would be too simple to understand it, because as we learn more, we're advancing the human brain. So it's a perpetual thing that we're going to be trying to understand ourselves. And then also, it's just like medicine of any kind. We work in a medical field, whether you're in a doctor's office or a hospital or a clinic or in a school, we're still connected to the medical world, right? And so we are practicing in our mm-hmm. field. So this is a continuous practice. I know that's kind of a joke that doctors will say is it is medical practice for a reason. It's not like an end all expert and you just stop at that point, because the field doesn't stop.
Do you guys remember the mnemonic device you used for the cranial nerves?
No.
Oh, how inappropriate it was? Yeah.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Mine was I made one up myself. Like everyone in the class had one for themselves, but it wasn't like clicking with me. So I made one up for myself, and it was pretty bad. Can't say it on the air.
You know, but you still remember it, so that's what counts.
I do.
I don't. I can't remember. I can.
Oh, Matt's not getting a joke right now. Come on.
No, I don't know. I guess I just.
Can you name the nerves?
Olfactory.
Nice.
Trigeminal.
You're already out of order.
He doesn't have to be in order. He just has to get them, right? I just
don't know.
First three, olfactory, optic, ocular, motor, I always got, and then I would mix them up.
Like, here's what I have to laugh about. Like, I can remember a song lyric from 1993 and sing the entire song.
That's why you got to make it into a song, Matt.
Oh,
the
yeah.
thing I need to know and memorize, and I bought a clipboard so I don't have to, like...
Shout out to music therapists who make that possible. And music teachers and SLPs who use music.
Shout out to my clipboard maker who put the nerves on there so I can quickly reference it, along with areas of effect from different brokas and stuff. So thank you for that. Different areas of lesion lets me know the effect.
There you go.
I just got the look from both you and from Michael and Michelle that was like, are you even part of our profession? Like,
that is not true. The look I just gave you.
Are you a podcast host pretending to be an SLP?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, oh yeah, this is what we're gonna do today. I just read this on the Googles, and we're gonna try it.
And you had your face at Asha and everything.
I know. Somebody thought it was.
more than life-size face for anyone.
What was your mnemonic device for memorizing the cranial nerves, or how do you look at aphasia, or how do you work with patients in neuroscience?
We want to send them in, even if they're inappropriate. Yeah. We won't share them all. We're just curious.
We might send them to your boss. It's okay. So email us speechscience2018@gmail.com or give us a phone call 614-681-1798.
The winner should get a prize. Whoever submits the best mnemonic device gets to play online games with Matt and his kids.
Ooh, there we go.
Ooh, I like that. Hey, did anyone do the hashtag speech science challenge, podcast challenge of giving up your devices for a night?
No, I couldn't do it. I tried, and then so I'm in this new game, and my Star Trek Federation ship needs to be checked on every 6 hours, or it's going to get blown up by the other guys. So. the dopamine drip was
was working. You know, we gave up the devices for the evening, but then I thought about it, and we definitely watched a show. So that sort of
killed. You're just as much of a failure. Michael, were you able to give up your device?
Yeah, that's definitely not happening. under any circumstances. I get too many emails.
Our last article comes out of Duluth News Tribune. People with dementia are still sensitive to caregivers' body languages. I can't tell you how many, this is just an opinion article, but I can't tell you how many times I have talked to family members and caregivers. And when I'm working with my dementia patients, I'm always telling them, they may not remember your name, they may not remember what you've done, but they know how you make them feel. So when you come in with the slumped shoulders and the drawn face and the I don't want to be here attitude, or I'm so sad or something, they really pick up, or the patients really pick up on that and can read or not trust you immediately based on that. I can't tell you how many times family members will be like, oh, my mom or dad just instantly trusted you and wanted to talk to you. And it's like, yeah, I came in, I faked it. I faked those shoulders high and that cheery smile, because it's all that extra sense, that pragmatic social skill.
I think it's also making sure that we're, what's the term? Assuming competency, mm-hmm. or that treat them as though they understand you, especially when you're dealing with an elderly adult. I know that we also need to weed out with young people when we're doing a language assessment, if they're understanding or not with receptive and expressive language, but you can still talk to these young adults and adults like they are a young adult and an adult, and especially somebody who has this life experience that, you know, when I was doing home health care, I would go in and just have a conversation. Matt, you've said that countless times on air about that is therapy. It's not just the lead into therapy. There's so much you can do if you just assume that they are there. And how is it going to hurt? It's just like modeling to a young kid language. If you're modeling language and talking to them like they're able to respond to you, there's still stuff getting in. Like, it's,
yeah, I feel like this is always brought up with dementia, but I recently watched a Robin Williams documentary, and this was something that the wife he had when he passed, this is something that she spoke about briefly, was, you know, there would be days when he was on and it seemed like there were no issues, and he was, you know, sensitive to body language and very responsive. And then there were days when he was just, his brain was just really feeding him that misinformation and really thoughts of that weren't aligned in reality. But, you know, as an SLP that does not work with dementia and Alzheimer's and swallowing, when I read these articles, you know, of course I think about all the SLPs that do it, but, you know, just knowing that it happened to someone that's just as beloved as Robin Williams and what happened to him, mm-hmm. it's definitely an incredibly sad thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of a downer to end on.
Well, I do think we can all get into our routine, like mm-hmm. the grind of the everyday. And if you're pushing through patients, if you're doing something else, we're not always at the top of our game. And it's a good thing to think of when we're dealing with dementia patients, that we need to be treating them just like they were understanding and participating in all of it.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why I give myself an extra 20 minutes before my patient's scheduled. So if I have a patient, when I'm doing home care in the summertime, if I have a patient scheduled at 9, I won't schedule the next patient until 10:30. I may get done with that first patient at 9:40 and be able to drive to the other person's house by 10 after 10. But I need to make sure that I'm, you know, if it's, I need to check email or I need to go through Facebook or I need to FaceTime my wife and the kids, or if I just need to play the Simpsons Tapped Out video game to get myself mentally ready. And I'm not even talking about reading case notes, just mentally putting myself in the right spot so that every time I walk into a patient's home, I'm ready to go. It can be very draining because our jobs are very tough. We are working with families that are very stressed. We're working with patients or children that are scared or don't know or upset or biting or kicking or screaming. It can drain us very quickly. And then if our body language doesn't portray the happy go lucky SLP, we can lose we can lose everything we've worked with our patient very quickly, because if they don't trust us the moment that we walk through the door, we lost them. We lost them for that day at least.
Yeah. Yes. So far this podcast is getting hard on we are not doing enough SLPs. Come on.
Well, pretty much what you're describing there is you're really just describing a method of self-care. You're reorganizing your mind and getting yourself ready to be the best you can possibly be for your client, for your patient. But one thing that I think is really important to recognize, especially with our audience of fellow speech pathologists out there, is that it's okay not to be 100%. Mm-hmm. It's okay to have your mind be a little preoccupied, to be thinking about your mom, your dad, your significant other, your kids, an issue you had at work or other things. You know, at the end of the day, we're people first. And the best SLPs that I've personally worked with are ones that are able to maintain that work-life balance. And the ones that are able to kind of, you know, keep things separate and kind of have that peace of mind. But it's okay to not be yourself for a day. It's okay to be preoccupied and not feel like you're able to really give it your all for a while.
Here's a speech pathology podcast, speech science podcast challenge that I think we should all do for real. And that is, how about we do a challenge of what are our listeners and what can we do this week to take care of ourselves and sure that we can be on top of our game when we are there.
I like that.
So do one thing this week that is challenge to take care of you as a therapist.
I'm going to play The Simpsons Tapped Out in my car.
Have you tried that, Michael?
I've never heard of it, but I would download it.
Okay, if you are a Simpsons fan, you will kill hours of your day.
I've played the one that's like Crazy Taxi, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I played that one.
I've been playing The Simpsons Tapped Out since grad school. So 8 years now, 9 years now, I've been playing it.
I play Happy Glass. You know that one?
Oh, yeah.
That's a great game.
Michelle, do you play any iOS or handheld or play or, you know, platform games?
Can't. I'm not much of a gamer. Sorry.
No.
I have my books. I like to read.
There you go.
Yeah, I want to get a Switch and play some Smash Bros.
I need to get a Switch. But I went to a thing at Asha back in Denver. That was talking about burnout, and it literally talked about what you just talked about, Mike. It was how, you know, at the time I think I was an SLP only for like 5 years at that point. And it was like, oh, burnout's a real thing and you need to meditate. And I was like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever been to.
There's an app I have on my phone, a meditation app.
There you go. But now 8 years in, Michael, I get it. I'm like, oh, yeah. Wow. There is something about like, not listening to the music and just putting your head on your steering wheel and breathing.
Exactly. Yeah. And everyone out there should be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have those sick days and if you have those personal days, take them, go somewhere.
Mental health day is a good thing.
My wife hates my Mad Hot mental health day because those are the days where I'm just like, I just need to regroup, get back to 100. Nice. How do you fight burnout? How do you do it? What do you do in your car to get ready to go into a patient or into work or in between therapy sessions? We want to know. podcast.speechscience.org and email us speechscience2018@gmail.com or call us 614-681-1798. I am fighting a yawn there. I apologize. Coming up after the break, why you should relook at how you look at foreign languages in the high school. We'll be right back. You're listening to Speak Science.
Hey, everyone. You know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice special sort of moment together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, I do, but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sweet Science. I'm Matt Hodd, joined by Michelle Wintering.
Hi again.
Michael McLeod.
What's up?
I thought you had froze there. I was like, no, we've almost gotten through.
We're so close.
We're so close. Ah, this one is coming out of Teen Vogue, which I know is just a wonderful bastion of great authorship, but this one has got a good article. Come on, it's Vogue. It's a fashion magazine. It's not anything else. But how do we look at foreign languages? What foreign language did you take, Michael? Did you take a foreign language?
I took Spanish.
Michelle?
And I was terrible at it.
I took Spanish in high school and in college, and then I took ASL in college and ASL outside of school in general.
Well, aren't you fancy? I took 7 years of German, and I can ask you, ist das dein Moped? Which means, is that your moped? That's what I...
No, I could have guessed that one.
Is that your moped?
Is that your moped?
How important is that question in your life, Matt?
I don't know, but like that was the first sentence we had to learn, and we had to be drilled on that all through high school. And it was like, ist das dein Moped? Ja, das ist mein Moped. Ja, du bist dein Moped? Do you have a moped?
What about,
have you seen the YouTube video 80? Of
80?
Spanish?
80 moped. Oh,
sorry. Isn't that danger? Octung danger?
I thought Octung was 80.
It's always on like the danger, like wet floor.
Oh yeah, yeah, Octung, yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Nice.
Have you ever seen the one semester Spanish love song on YouTube?
No, but I feel like I need to find that now.
That would be a humorous link to share with our listeners.
All right, we will put that on there. However, this article is saying maybe we need to look at American Sign Language as a language requirement.
I mean, I could look at the title of this article and say, yes, you know me, I worked at a school for the deaf.
I know, that's why I picked it for you.
And the blind I think it would be crazy not to accept this. And a lot of people, including parents of patients, because a lot of speech pathologists will take, a lot of programs require at least ASL1, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basic understanding so that we can use it as a modality to augment communication for young kids when they need it, or for people who need some sort of nonverbal way to bridge to verbal language or to bridge to a communication device or whatever else it is. But the vast majority of speech pathologists don't use ASL. We use signs, right? Because
mm-hmm.
ASL is a full, complete syntactic language. It's just a different mode. It's visual and spatial. And I mean, I wish I'm not the expert on it. I just know enough to get by. But you should talk to a deaf person or talk to interpreters who work with both of those languages. But yes, it's a full, complete language, and it's daunting to people because they think it's not verbal. It's somehow going to mess up verbal language because we're using it. We're using our hands and our face and our body to communicate. But it should count because it's one of the, if I remember right, the third most spoken language. I'm going to have to look that up, but I'm pretty sure it's English, Spanish, and American Sign Language are like the top three in the U.S.
Yeah, I did an observation in a middle school a few weeks ago or like a couple of months ago, and they had a woman in there who was signing to one of the deaf students who was in the classroom, and I freaking loved it. Like, I never saw that when I was a student in high school or middle school. I just thought it was so cool, and I think it's so good for the other students to experience that and see that and to have it in the classroom. I was totally geeking out that school had that. I immediately told the person who was there with me, and I just thought it was fantastic that they were doing that and they had those accommodations there and the other students were exposed. But I just didn't. My own personal experience was I didn't. I don't think there were any deaf students at my school. And to see that there and to see that the other students were getting that experience, I thought it was fantastic.
Now, did that school, I'm curious, offer ASL as a course?
Probably not. I'm assuming not. Like, when I read this article, the first thing I thought of was typically in middle school, high school, when you offer teenagers a second language, none of them, the vast majority of them just don't appreciate it. When am I going to need this? When am I going to use this? I'm not going to Spain. I'm not going to Italy. Why do I need to know this? And then once they're an adult, they say, damn, I really wish I knew a second language.
Mm-hmm. Fairfield,
that would happen. Yeah, so I feel like that would happen a lot with ASL.
But if you have a school that has even one or two deaf students in it, you know those kids have a reason to learn ASL.
Exactly.
And to
exactly.
be motivated in that sign language course that they might not be, because now every day they could use it with someone versus I'm never going to go to Spain.
Exactly. Exactly. So if they personally know someone who's deaf or anything, I think it'd be fantastic. I think this should be almost a requirement for schools to have this.
I didn't realize that this wasn't accepted by a lot of colleges still. I thought that was a conversation when I was in high school where they were talking about high schoolers who took ASL. It didn't count as their foreign language credit. And I thought we'd move beyond that, but apparently not.
Not quite.
Huh. I'm printing something, so I had my thing muted. But no, I mean, that is at Fairfield High School, they offer sign language, two or three levels of sign language now for the high school student. You know, in this article, I pulled up the original just to give her credit. Evelyn Pay, a class of 2022, attending Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute for Environmental Science from Fresh U, was the original author of that article. So hats off to you, Evelyn.
Well, and hats off about the article, because I do appreciate having worked with a lot of people who are part of deaf culture, seeing that they spoke about deaf culture in this article too. Yeah. And spoke about the history of ASL and tied it to Gallaudet University as well, and the founder of Gallaudet in Washington, D.C. So I like that they touched on that, because if you go take a sign language class, an intra-level class, the majority should, especially at the college level, they cover, just like they would with a Spanish class, cover cultural aspects of that language. The same is true for sign language. It's not just signs for English words, and I will say that over and over because people think it is. It is different word order. It is different. It is a different language, and it was not derived from English. So forget English when you take ASL.
Well, let's send this thing home, because we could probably talk in a couple more hours. We want to hear from you. Head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org, and from there you can email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, or give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. We want to make sure, have you head over to iTunes and give us a rate and a review. 5 stars helps us get seen by other people, and it inflates our egos. I like inflated egos. That's why we are on the radio, sort of, maybe, or we're in your head. Either way, give us the 5 stars if you're listening to us. Michelle, what are you doing this week?
Oh, working on those CEUs, getting ready for Christmas. I got to wrap some presents. We got our tree up. I'm looking at the Christmas lights right now.
Aw. Michael, what's your plans this week?
Same, pretty much the same thing. Got to do a lot of, got to do some shopping. Got to get those CEUs done. Got a ton of meetings that I got to get done before the holidays. So I'll be busy.
Yeah, I've got a couple more ETRs and IEPs this week, and then I've got to go and pick up the wifey's Christmas gift. So,
that'll be good.
I'm not saying on the air. So.
Does she listen?
She might. She's
she
in the
might.
Other room, so I know there's that.
Has she left us a review?
Love the show, hate the main host. Doesn't.
Yeah.
Never does laundry. our opening music today. Oh, I can't find it. What is our opening music? It is Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Our bump music is the Spellbreaker by Tri Tachyon, and our closing music tonight is Kevin MacLeod's The Slow Burn. They're all licensed under an attribution only and share alike license. For Michelle Wintering and Michael MacLeod, I'm Matt Hott, saying in the immortal words of Janice Wright, be a willow, because under the storm, the oak will crack, the willow will bend and go right back to its former beauty. This is Speech Science. So long, everybody. Wait, we did it.
You're listening to the Exceptional Podcast Network.